As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
11th play of this drive. Allen. Here comes Parsons. Runs away. Throws on the run. Has a man. Caught. Touchdown. It's Cook.
How about them Cowboys indeed?
That's not how we drew it up. Bills 31, Cowboys 10. We had John out there covering the game in Buffalo. He's here along with me, Kent, from The Athletic. And we've got Saad Youssef, your other Cowboys beat writer, along for the ride as well. Let's cut to the chase, boys. John, how's your back feeling after being spiked through a table in Buffalo?
It's good. I think it was a table that had already been broken before.
Yeah, pre-rigged.
So I think because of that, it was just pretty smooth. The problem, though, I have is I just have these burns on my arm because they lit the table on fire, and I wasn't able to put my arm out for a little bit. But outside of that, I still feel like I left in better shape than the Cowboys did.
As somebody who, if you follow John, I suggest you do, who doesn't follow John these days, who follows the Cowboys, but as somebody who I know you love capturing the fan excitement, the fan experience of the games, I figured you'd be out there capturing all that for social media before the Cowboys-Bills game, but you stayed away from the tailgating areas?
Well, I got there super early, and I did look for some tables, but I didn't really find any.
You did? Okay.
Super close to where...
The media entrance.
Let me think of a good way to describe this. So the table-breaking videos that you're seeing are because everybody has a phone on them now. It's not like it's one table breaking area. It's just the fact that everybody has a phone. And so if someone in your group decides to break a table, someone's going to post that on social media, and then someone's going to steal it, and someone's going to steal that, and someone's going to steal that, and then it's going to blow up or whatever. But it's not like there's just this one area that I saw where people were doing that type of activity. Mm. To be honest with you, it seemed very similar to the tailgating I've seen in Green Bay, where it's not so much about the parking lot like it is in Kansas City, where it's more so that there are just a lot of homes that are very close to the stadium. So people on game days turn their front lawns into parking lots. And there's just like a lot of areas where people are tailgating kind of away from the stadium. And it was raining out, and I walked around for a little bit, but then I got to a point where I'm like, I'm just going into the stadium. And so I looked around for some stuff like that.
You did,
but there was
try.
Nothing that, yeah, there was nothing that really stood out to me like that. And then since the game has ended, I haven't seen any like videos of anything really great surfacing.
I just pictured you going out there to film a Twitter video and then getting smashed through a table.
Yeah, I'm open to that. But I didn't see anything when I was like walking to the game.
You know? I love that. Well, I imagine a lot of you in Cowboys Nation were smashing tables, smashing TVs after this game. I was worried that the Cowboys would be able to weather that storm going up to Buffalo in that environment this time of year with Buffalo playing how they are with a little fire. And, but I was convinced in our prediction show that the Cowboys are playing extremely well too. And the Cowboys had some momentum. John, how does this make you feel? Just general thoughts coming out of this game.
Yeah, it's not that they lost. There's no shame in losing to that Bills team, especially at home and the way they've played lately. That's a good football team. That is one of the best teams in the AFC. It's the not being really that competitive. It's the being 31-3 in the fourth quarter where you never really feel like there's going to be a play or two made that get you into the game. And so because of that, I think that's the disheartening part. The other major factor in that, as bad as the offense was, at least that's a little bit of an outlier where you're like, man, the offense has been so good for like 2 months. So maybe this is just, you know, everyone's entitled to a bad game. And they certainly had that. But the run defense, I mean, to make James Cook look like Barry Sanders, what are we doing?
He looked like LaDainian Tomlinson playing against the WAC. You know, it was like he's running all over the field. It was unbelievable.
And here's the thing. This is what makes, especially when we're talking about the NFL, so fun and so difficult to bet on, is because there aren't things that you just hang your hat on like, well, this will happen so I can just bet on. That's why it's just such, there's so much parity. And so when you beat to death the storyline going into these games about how Jonathan Hankins is out, Mozzie Smith has to step up, this is going to be a big game for the run defense. A lot of times when you say that stuff, you think, well, once the game starts, because everybody talked about it all week, that won't be one of the issues. It'll be something else. They'll turn the ball over a bunch, whatever. But no. Not only is it the run defense, but it's way worse than anybody could have imagined. I mean, James Cook in his wildest dreams did not think he was going to run that well. And because it's been an issue for so many years, it's kind of like the penalties with me. There's just so much carryover from year to year to where you look at it and you're like, you can't be so critical to where you feel like you're bashing like just an awful team because they're making the playoffs for a third consecutive year. They're obviously very good, but there's enough there to where you're like, yeah, but I know how this story ends. It removes a lot of the hope that you have of like, yeah, but you know what? Maybe this year in January, maybe this year it'll be a little bit different. And when you see things like you saw Sunday, you look around and you're like, Nope. I know how this one ends. And so, yeah, they'll get Jonathan Hankins back. And that makes you think that, hey, maybe some of this stuff will get cleaned up. But there was enough in that game for, I think, most people that have followed this team to go, yeah, I kind of know how this one's going to end.
Zod.
Yeah, I also think that the narrative of Jonathan Hankins for me is also one that is troublesome when we talk about it. Jonathan Hankins is a good player that his absence alone should not rock an entire defense. Like, you should not, like, this isn't Aaron Donald being out of the lineup. This isn't Micah Parsons missing a game. It's Jonathan Hankins. Like, if your run defense is so, you know, like, reliant on Jonathan Hankins being in the middle, like, that's an issue. Because and I say that with all due respect to Hankins, he's a very good player who was having a very good stretch right before he got hurt. So I'm not diminishing him. It's just, there's like five players on this team. Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Jake Ferguson, well, the entire offensive line. And then Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence and Brandon Aubrey. It's like, those are like the few players that I'm like, you know what? If you like, I don't go into that game and be like, oh, Malik Hooker's not playing, so I, you know, just scratch everything that you thought of. Like, no, that's, you don't do that with quality good players that are not like that. So that for me was one thing, and it was damning to see the way that the Bills were running all over them. And to me, that was a big surprise. The other thing is what John said about the offense too. For me, that's another big thing. Look, when we picked pregame, or when we picked the game, I picked Cowboys to win 35-31. So I expected the Bills to put up about 31, which they did. But I expected the offense to do a lot more. And, you know, I kind of wrote about this whenever you're listening to this. I wrote about this Tuesday morning where this team is, I don't want to call them just front runners, but they play so much better, so much more calm and established when they get out to a lead. Like, the numbers show how much better they play when they're playing from ahead. And like in a 31-3 game, and I count this as a 31-3 loss. It wasn't 31-10. It was 31-3. And in a 31-3 loss, one drive or one play doesn't make like the entire game difference, especially not in the first quarter. But I do wonder if Dak Prescott hits Brandon Cooks on that second play of the game. I do wonder how the trajectory of everything is altered and how it changes and things like that. I still think the Cowboys lose. The issue is not, like John said, it's not about the loss. And we said this about San Francisco too. No shame in losing to that San Francisco team in San Francisco, no matter what time of the year. It's about how you lost. Like, you didn't belong on the same field as these two teams. And that's troublesome to me.
Yeah, certainly a concern. What do you make of the home versus away discrepancy this year? How good the Cowboys have played at home. I think I saw a stat before the game that they're averaging 35 points at home and 20 points on the road. Might be even less after this game. Again, I don't know if that's updated. But John, do you make anything of that?
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly very comfortable at home, and it's an environment where every time you go there, it's going to be pretty similar, especially this year. You know, there's not one game is the door or the roof been open. So you're not dealing with any elements at all. And so, you know, every single game, what you're going to deal with there from a weather standpoint, you know, what you're going to get fan standpoint, and you know, what you're going to get in terms of your routine, time you wake up, route you take to the stadium, when you warm up, you know, the field conditions, everything like that, where all the, you know, whatever the clocks are, all that stuff. You're just super confident because you've played there so many times. And I do think that playing on the turf there and no elements, I think that when they're at their best, they're a quick mm-hmm. team. And that's when they can get, you know, especially on offense, they can put a pretty big number on you pretty quickly. And if that happens, then the other team's forced to throw. When the other team's forced to throw, now you're playing into the Cowboys' greatest strength, and that's their pass rush. But when you can just sit there and nickel and dime them with just run after run after run, and Cook can go for over 7 yards a carry like that, there's no reason to pass. You don't need to. And when that happens for a team that's as good as the Cowboys, as talented as the Cowboys are, as accomplished as their coaching staff is, as accomplished as this team has been, what they've built over the last 3 years, there is no excuse to lose the way they did to the 49ers or the Bills the way they did. There is no team in the NFL that should beat this Dallas Cowboys team like that when they have their players on the field. And in both games, they did. You know, I know Zach Martin went out, but for the most part, you had your offensive line for that game. Dak's healthy, CD, Micah, Lawrence. I mean, there's just not any major excuses you can point to in either of those games to get dismantled the way that they did. Lose? Hey, it's the NFL. Stuff happens. 20-14 lose to the Bills, totally different story. You're moving past that and you're going, hey, now they got to get ready for Miami. Look at this team. This team hasn't lost back-to-back games since Thanksgiving in 2021. They know how to rebound. They'll be fine. But it's hard to watch that game and not go, okay, well, they're going to face some good teams on the road. In January, these teams are obviously going to be able to run the ball. When they do, are the Cowboys going to have a spark against them? Because that was the thing. When I'm watching that game in Buffalo, I'm like, when are they going to make a play that turns the tide? And it just never happened. It made me sit there and think, how many more quarters need to be played before that play finally happens? Whether it be an interception, a fumble, a big play in the passing game, there was nothing. And it reminded me of that Niners game a lot where you're like, ah, it's only four quarters. But if you guys want to play 8 or 12 or 16, this isn't going to be any different. We know where this is going. This isn't changing. No one's doing anything here to change this. I wrote after the game specifically about the three plays that I thought really changed everything early. One, the DeMarcus Lawrence roughing the passer, quote unquote. I mean, obviously a great flop job by Josh Allen to sell that. I didn't think that was really the type of call that should have been made there. That gives you 4 extra points right there. Instead of them settling for a field goal, they get 7 a couple plays later. The play that probably bothered me the most was the one that followed that for me in terms of big plays, and that was Sam Williams running in the punter. I mean, you can't be doing that. I mean, that's just too big of a momentum. Don't touch him. Just let them punt the football. Get the ball back. Let Turpin maybe get a little bit of a return. Get it back to your offense. That's fine. The risk reward between you trying to get that punt, like, because there's just so many punts blocked in the NFL nowadays. I mean, the chance of that flipping it and that being the play that changes it are so small in the NFL nowadays that there's a way greater chance that something goes wrong than something goes well. I'm fine. I have a talented offense. Just punt the ball to us and let's try and get something going there. That one, let that drive keep rolling. Next thing you know, it's 14-0. And then the J. Ryan Curse play, that the unnecessary roughness, that was very questionable. But it is also kind of on par with what's being called in the NFL nowadays. That was another one, keeps the drive going. Next thing you know, it's 21-3. And you didn't need to watch any more of that game. It was over at that point.
Well, you know, I'll actually pick up right there because I agree with all that. But then to me, one thing that really bothered me was it's 21-3 now. And you come out of the half, you have the ball, you score a touchdown here, and it's 21-10. I mean, you're right back in it. It's 3rd-and-1, and you take a 7-step drop and take a sack on that. Like, I mean, there has to be a better play that you have in your book for 3rd-and-1 from your own 39-yard line than Dak Prescott taking a play action 7-step drop and taking a sack like that. Like, to me, that's when it was like, all right, like, you know, you're just not in your bag, as Dak said, Mike McCarthy was for a long time. 3rd-and-1, you can't do that.
Right. Cause even on that play, if you just hand it to Lipke and he gets stoned right at the line of scrimmage and it's 4th-and-1, at least you got a decision to make there.
Right.
When you take that sack on 3rd-and-1, you're just like, oh, well, we got to punt now.
Yeah.
We got to bring out our punter and hope that they recklessly send somebody at our punter to extend this drive.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. People generally don't do that. Good teams generally don't do that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if the team was unprepared coming into this. They didn't expect the running game to be as good as it was. But it felt like the mentality coming in should have been, this is our Super Bowl. And if that wasn't the thought, or, you know, what McCarthy was preaching, we need to play a perfect game to win this game, then that's a little concerning. And if it was, and that's how they showed up, then that's even more concerning. So,
well, I'm sure that was being preached. I'm sure that was being talked about. You know, I mean, you would have to just not know anything about football or not care. Let's say you'd have to be a player that just shows up and doesn't even pay attention to what's going on in the league, not to know that Buffalo's trending in a direction of, this is something that you're going to have to bring your A game. You're not just going to walk into that place and just be like, hey, this is kind of like the Bears or you know, I don't know who else is terrible this year. It's a good thought now. I don't know who else is awful this year.
Panthers.
Yeah, Panthers. That's a good one too. I don't know, but it seems like even every team at least has like a spurt to where I just don't feel like there's just that one just terrible. Oh, totally.
But they felt undisciplined.
Yeah, you know, sloppy. I just feel like they played their Super Bowl the week before against the Eagles, and the Bills are playing right now. Like every week is, we have to play our best to have a chance to.
When they get in the playoffs,
yeah,
they're going to have to stack wins against good opponents.
Yeah,
and that's why I don't know why anybody other than just being a fan hoping for the best would think that that's going to happen. Logic does not tell you that that's going to happen. There's nothing. If that happens, that will be fun for Sad and I, because it'll be so easy to write about. It'll be the easiest layup writing there.
Cowboys, Bills, Super Bowl. Perfect.
It's hard
layup
to write off of these games when they're the exact same thing that you've seen for the last 2 or 3 years. It's difficult to try and put a twist on. Well, the reason this happened was when you've seen the similar things happen.
Yeah, and I'll say one interesting thing that kind of stood out to me, John. I don't know if you caught this yesterday, but McCarthy talking at the press conference, and he invoked the Texas Rangers for a quick second when they're like talking about the road and like how they just got to be like the Texas Rangers, because nobody expected going into the playoffs. Nobody expected that anything. The Texas Rangers were a terrible road team. They were reeling. They barely got into the playoffs. And then, like John said, a switch flipped and okay, now here we go. And you know, it's all different. Now that could happen. And I think McCarthy, like, you know, you hope that that's going to happen, but that's all you can really hope for, because right now the pattern doesn't say that there's any. The only thing that you can hope for is you like the switch flips and off you go. That's really all you can hope for right now.
Yeah, I mean, there is a path I see where, you know, I do think that regardless of what happens between now and in January, or the start of the playoffs, I should say, because technically they play a game in January. I do think they'll win in the first round. The divisional round is the one where that'll really be, let's see what can happen here. And then likely then to go to the Super Bowl, you're probably going to have to go through San Francisco. If you don't go through them, have to go through them in the divisional round. There is a part of me that could see them beating San Francisco just because everybody will just be predicting, well, of course they're not going to beat the Niners. Like, that's not going to happen. We know what this team is. They're not going to be that. And there's a part of you that, you know, when it's the NCAA tournament and there's just one game, some stuff can happen. Guys can get hurt. You know, there can be some uncharacteristic fumbles. Some things can happen that keep you in the game. All of a sudden, you got all the momentum on your side in a game that nobody thought you were going to win. That's possible. But then you got to go win the next week. And that's where I just, with this team, I just have questions about, can they do that multiple weeks in a row on the road? If they were to win the division and get to host multiple games at AT&T Stadium, I could see some parts of the season being different because they have established a legitimate home field advantage. But I just have my doubts about that happening, even with Philly's loss yesterday.
If Dallas is going to be a team that really makes noise, I think they're going to have to rely on both sides of the ball. I don't think the defense can carry them through the playoffs. I don't think just the offense can carry them through the playoffs. And so when you have a game like yesterday,
where neither side shows up.
True. But when the defense clearly isn't showing up and you're in the first half and you're down 14-3 and then 21-3, and John, to take a phrase from, you know, Coach Garrett, when it comes down to nut cutting time and you get nothing, that's concerning. You got to get something in that first half to make us feel like we can go in with some kind of momentum. And it opens up a bigger conversation about Dak, you know, about when it's time for Dak to step up. Can he step up? Is Dak's best good enough? And it harkens back to last season, John, around this time. So I'm sure you remember this as well. We're talking about the biggest deficiencies of this team. It was, you know, an inconsistent Dak Prescott and an inability to stop the run. And here we are in 2023 with the exact same problems. I'm not feeling like I'm in run it back mode right now, where I was totally in that mode last week.
Yeah. I understand those questions. I just, like, you know, for me personally, I just can't go from, you know, atop the MVP conversation to, like, is Dak the problem? Like, that's a little bit of a jump, because, you know, we've seen in the last decade, Joe Flacco, Nick Foles, like, we've seen these quarterbacks win Super Bowls. And so I don't really question if you can win a Super Bowl with Dak. It's more about how much do you need from him to do that? Do you need him to be that elite level quarterback consistently? And the whole sell of this team was flipping the identity of this team and having a defense to where, you know, that they can help carry the team. Cause that's what happened with Flacco. That's what happened with, you know, with those teams where it's like, you know, there are other parts. And can you win with Dak? Like, absolutely. You can win with him.
Stafford was the same way.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, you might agree, but, like, I do put Stafford a level above Dak personally, but, like,
yeah, but he needed that rest of that team around him too. He wasn't going to just do it, like, where he's like Mahomes, where it's like, hey, largely this is because of him, or even some of those years with Brady, where, right, you're like, this is largely because of Brady. Yeah. I also look at the bigger picture too. This isn't just like, we need a new ace starting pitcher. There's a lot of those out there. You look across the league, there just isn't that many good number one franchise quarterbacks. And so even if Dak comes up short again in the playoffs, what is your answer? Like, who are you going to get?
He's a top 10 quarterback.
Oh, easy. Yeah, there's no question about that. And then even the guys that you would have in that, whatever, you know, 3 to 6 range, there's nobody even there where you're just like, oh, well, yeah, give up all the picks you need to go get that player, because when you bring that player to the Cowboys, nobody should be surprised if that player then continues to have the same results we've been seeing from them. So yeah, I don't look at it as a Dak thing very much. I do think that he's capable of playing well enough for them to win the Super Bowl. I really do.
Crazy, insane, hypothetical time. Patent pending. If the Bears have the number one pick, I mean, I'm speaking as somebody who's produced the Bears podcast for the past four years, so I know the pain that they're going through.
I'm not interested in anything you're going to say.
Would you trade Dak for the number one pick being either, you know, Caleb Williams, Drake May, whoever you want to take there, and they give you Justin Fields too? So you go into next season with your quarterback room.
I thought you were doing Justin Fields.
You go into next year with your quarterback room, Justin Fields, either Drake May or Caleb Williams. Assuming Trey Lance, you know, somebody like that.
I don't see any way the Bears would do this.
Yeah, no, there's no way.
You don't.
No.
And the Bears wouldn't do that. The Bears would be ridiculous.
I know how much the Bears love Dak. Bears people love Dak. And
it doesn't matter, Dak. But the numbers don't make any sense. You take Caleb Williams on a rookie contract for 5 years over Dak Prescott 10 out of 10 times.
Well, like, here's in my opinion, the thing, the argument now that they're having is the unknown. They're scared of the unknown. They're scared of what if Caleb Williams doesn't work out? What if Drake May is another Mitchell Trubisky?
Oh, you're talking about from the Bears perspective?
From the Bears perspective, what they would be buying with Dak would be stability.
You get Dak and he plays the worst ball of his career for the final 3 or 4 years he's in Chicago.
Oh, maybe.
Is this difficult for people to see? Follow the trend in the history of Chicago Bears quarterbacking play. I mean, I'm not saying Jay Cutler was the greatest quarterback or whatever, but like Jay Cutler, when he went to the Bears, like it didn't surprise me that he didn't all of a sudden turn into, I don't know. I can't name anyone because there isn't anybody that's been the Bears quarterback that you would go and say that Jim McMahon. So, like, exactly. I don't know how a Bears fan wouldn't look at it and go, yeah, and then we make that move for him, and he doesn't play. Like, his best years were with the Cowboys. Like, if you're a Bears fan and you're surprised
even if that's
by that,
the case, is that not fault. Is Dak at 75% not better than what they've had for the past decade?
Oh, for what they've had, yeah. But if they make a move like you just said and give up all of that, they would be expecting the best Dak Prescott.
Yeah, and also like, maybe I was a little too strong with 10 out of 10 times you take Caleb Williams over Dak Prescott on a rookie contract, but that's a little strong. But I would say, like, if I'm thinking about it, like, Caleb Williams on a rookie contract and building around him does seem like the more feasible, 10 out of 10 times you trade for Patrick Mahomes, no matter what but when you're talking about Dak Prescott and the contract he's going to get versus 5 years with Caleb Williams on a rookie deal. I mean, the NFL is a business. It's not just about player. I mean, who do I want to win with next year? Probably Dak Prescott over Caleb Williams. But the life of a 5-year contract, I'd probably take Caleb Williams on a rookie deal.
So having said that, from the Cowboys perspective, would you do that deal? Shad? Ryan Poles calls you tomorrow and says, hey, you got this number one pick. If you want to get rid of Dak in the offseason, shake hands now.
When do you got to get the deal done?
Yeah, it's tough.
Combine.
No, yeah, then let me see how the season ends.
Yeah.
Let's say it ends like you've been saying, John, where we know this is.
Oh, then yeah,
this
I'm doing the deal. For sure I'm doing the deal, yeah.
Yeah.
But there is a part interesting of me that hypothetical that maybe that, I mean, that's the thing about sports. You just never know from year to year, like what a team can do that keeps knocking on the door like that. And so maybe everything just falls their way, you know, and they get Hankins back and they're healthy. And we look back at the Bills game and think that, okay, that was the last one where they played like that. And they got some favorable matchups in January. But I need to see that if it ends the same way that it's been ending, especially with a new contract being due. Yeah, I have to agree with Saad. You take that rookie contract deal and start maneuvering, because it's not just about Dak. It's the fact that what you got to pay Micah and CeeDee Lamb and, you know, to keep the rest of this nucleus together. So, but I keep going back. I just don't see any way that the Bears would do something like that.
Yeah, and you know, I was just looking back at, because I asked Schottenheimer this question the other day, where I was like, you know, you had that 45-3 loss to the Patriots in 2010 when he was with the Jets, and kind of going back to that, I mean, the Jets were terrible down the stretch of that, and then they start the playoffs, and they're the only team, I believe, in NFL history to knock out Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in back-to-back weeks. They beat Peyton Manning in the first round. They beat Tom Brady in the second round. Like, can things happen? Like John said, like, can, like, all the chips fall their way and, you know, things like that? It's the NFL. You can't rule it out. So, to me, it is a little wait and see as well to see if, like, you know, some crazy things happen like that.
Well, since we know people are going to ask, I'm sure you guys, Twitter has been getting hit up like crazy. Let's talk about run, stop, help. John, is there any possibility they could do anything to get some help down the stretch here? I'm looking at Spotrac. Not a lot of names. I mean, Dominican Sue's out there. Tristan Hill. Akeem Hicks. I mean, I think this situation is what it is at this point, right?
Yeah, I think if they felt like Hankins wasn't going to be back this season, they would entertain one of those names, not including Tristan Hill. and then they would go from there. But I think they expect Hankins to be back. I don't think it'll be this week, and it might not be next week. And they might keep him, you know, off his feet until the playoffs start, because they know how important it is to have him in the middle for that run defense. So maybe they're a little extra cautious there, knowing that they're certainly going to be in the playoffs. But I think if he was out for the season, they would have to. You couldn't just roll with what they have right now. You'd have to go out and make a move for someone. Not saying that that would be the answer. I think their best answer is a healthy Hankins. That's the at where we are right now. You know, if it was before the trade deadline, obviously that'd be different. Or if it was in the offseason, that'd be different. But where the team is right now, I think their best bet is to get Hankins as healthy as possible and ready for the playoffs.
What do you think about Mozzie Smith and how he was drafted for this exact reason and doesn't seem to be helping much at all?
Yeah, I think of how it with defensive tackles, it's tough, man. Unless you get like one of those top 10 type defensive tackles that, and even those guys miss, it's hard to really expect a ton in year one. And so it's definitely, there's been growing pains there. I think everybody sees that his get off is just not on the level of what you'd expect from an elite defensive tackle. He has areas that he needs to get better at. But I understand why they drafted him, because this is their biggest hole is this run defense. And so he was at the point where they were drafting, he was probably the best option that they had to try and fix that area of the team. And it just hasn't worked out. But I give them the benefit of the doubt because they've drafted so well. I mean, especially in the first round, even under McCarthy, you don't have to go back before that. And just, if you tell anybody else, you want to use your hypothetical about the Bears, okay, I'll use a hypothetical you can say for the Bears or for any team that's drafting high. I'm talking about teams with top five picks. I'm talking about teams with top two or three picks. If you could say for 3 years in a row that you would get Tyler Smith, Micah Parsons, and CeeDee Lamb, you got to expect that one of these years you're probably going to get a guy that's a little underwhelming. You know, I mean, you're not just going to keep hitting. I know all these. I mean, you just look at the guys that when you talk about the Dallas Cowboys, you're just like, contracts going forward, it's all guys that they've drafted. It's every one of them is somebody that they drafted. So I just think the law of average, you would be pretty silly to think, well, just every year they need to get another CeeDee Lamb or Tyler Smith. There's going to be some guys that just aren't going to contribute that much right away. I think if you're a Cowboys fan, you got to hope that Mozzie ends up being, you know, as impactful as, let's say, an Osa Odighizuwa, where you're just like, hey, it's a really solid start or whatever. But I don't think that you should look at it as, okay, we're going to get this game wrecker in the middle that ends up being like, you know, making Pro Bowls and stuff. Like, I don't think that that's what he's going to be.
Yeah. And I also think that there's a level of cumulative evaluation when you look at it too. I mean, you know, what if Mozzie Smith is your 2022 fifth round pick and Daron Bland is your 2023 first round pick? I mean, they've hit in other areas too, where it kind of like, to some degree, kind of like, you know, evens out a little bit, where, you know, Dak Prescott was your fourth round pick. Trayvon Diggs was a second round pick. Like they've hit in other places. And And even in the 2023 draft class alone, I mean, give this a couple of years, and I'm curious to see how, you know, DeMarvion Overshown kind of, like, you know, ends up being, and how you look at this draft class in retrospect after seeing what Overshown is able to do as well. So I didn't love the pick when they made it, didn't hate it, understood why they did it, but the biggest thing is I agree with the nature of the position, that it does take a little longer with defensive tackles.
It's funny too, because, like, I know it was coming down to two guys. They've released the video. There's no, you know, speculating. It was coming down to Mazzie or Matthew Bergeron. Clearly this team would have been better off with another offensive lineman, just because of how thin they've been on the offensive line. Like, one guy goes down and it is just, everything changes for them. But the one that I look at when I look back to that draft is, I know that their top tight end was, what's it called? Sam Laporta. And ooh, so I look at, if they had Sam Laporta and Jake Ferguson together on this team, obviously you wouldn't have drafted Schoonmaker, but that's the one that I kind of look back from time to time and I'll go, that's got the potential of some Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez type on the field type performing. Sorry.
Yeah. Story hasn't been written yet. We don't know that.
But. I think it's written.
No, that's really interesting. And, you know, that's an ultimate what if. Speaking of O-line, what's the situation on Zach Martin?
I think he plays. I think Zach ends up playing this week against the Dolphins. I think they get Malik Hooker back too, which will be big against that passing attack that they have. Jerry on the radio Tuesday morning was non-committal, which kind of surprised me. Usually he's the one that is more positive about this stuff. But Zach after the game, Mike McCarthy on Monday, just kind of going off of their answers that, and then also just the way Mike McCarthy talks about injuries in general, there's nothing definitive, but you read between the lines, I would say they expect Zach to play in that game. So that'll be huge for them. Not that, I mean, I didn't think TJ Bass was bad in the game or anything like that, but he's obviously not Zach Martin. So I think Zach plays in this game. That's which way I'd be leaning on this.
Did you get to talk to him after the game, TJ Bass?
No. After losses, it's kind of tough because, you know, if you get like a Micah Parsons or Zach Martin, or I'm trying to think who else was I around. But anyway, when they talk for like a few minutes, and locker room opens generally right when McCarthy starts talking. So it's like McCarthy talks for 10 minutes. And then if you're around Micah for, you know, 6-7 minutes and Zach for 5 or 6 minutes, and then you got to go to Dak at the podium for 10 minutes. Like, it just, it's so shrunken down that it's hard to get everything else like that out of it. So,
from his perspective,
locker rooms after losses, man, they're trying to get you out there pretty quick. It's tough to get a bunch of stuff.
From his perspective, I mean, that's got to be one of the last situations you say to yourself, I'm going to be ready every game. I just got to prepare, like I'm going to go in. But that's got to be one of the last situations he expects, is Zach Martin to go down, and the next play, there he is.
That is the life of that position, though.
It's just got to be crazy when it actually happens.
Yeah, same for Cooper Rush. You know, if he has to go in, I mean, he's got to be, you know, kind of expecting that's a possibility for sure.
Oh, that's good. Good news that we'll have no long-term, hopefully, injuries coming from Zach Martin.
I think Zach Martin would still play. I don't think they punt on the season or anything like that, but I do wonder if the Eagles had won on Monday, if that alters the approach at all, where you're like, you know, let's give Zach another week, because at this point, it really looks like a long shot. I mean, if the Eagles had won that game against Seattle, but now it's all on the table, you know? So.
Yeah.
I think it's tough to talk Zach Martin out of not playing. So.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that too, for sure.
Speaking of, Eagles losing three straight, 49ers still looking like an absolute gauntlet in the NFC.
And who then also lost three in a row.
And then,
it is just interesting. I mean, those are the two teams that you think of as the top in the NFC with like the Cowboys. And it's like the Cowboys just don't have that.
Yeah.
To not lose back-to-back games in as long as they've had, it's pretty impressive. That's why it's so difficult to be you don't want to be overly critical, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because there is so much positive there that it's not like it's just your, oh, they lost in Buffalo and they dropped to, you know, they got, that was, they're stuck at like 8 wins fighting for a playoff spot or something. I mean, what they've done year after year for these last 3 seasons is impressive, but I also think that that's why you expect more out of them. That's why you expect them not to get blown out in San Francisco. That's why you expect them not to get blown out by the Bills. I mean, those 2 games they lost by a combined 53 points. Like, this team is too good to have games like that on their resume.
Yeah. And speaking on the San Francisco and Philadelphia skids, I just want to say, like, San Francisco, there's explanations. Like, you saw the rash of injuries. I mean, they didn't have Debo, they didn't have Trent Williams, they didn't have McCaffrey. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles are getting to the point where I'm like starting to think, like, are they fraudulent? Like what's going on here? Because if Josh Allen, if against Buffalo, if Jake Elliott doesn't go nail a 59-yard field goal in the rain, and then Josh Allen and Gabe Davis are on the same page on which way to turn in overtime, I mean, you're talking about a longer losing streak here. And the Kansas City Chiefs said, and I know that what if happens a lot, but man, when Drew Lock goes 98 yards on you, with the game on the line, you start
in a game that you just switched defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
Like, I think about if that's the Cowboys, like if, like, let's say off of this Buffalo Bill game going into Miami, they're like, McCarthy is no longer calling plays. It will now be Brian Schottenheimer. I mean, sound the alarms, you know, like that's not a good sign. And honestly, I got more confidence in Schottenheimer than Patricia. So, I mean, that's, that's not even on the same level.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw that tweet come out. Was it the day before the game? I think maybe
the morning
Philly? Morning of. Yeah. When I saw they were doing that, I was like, whoa, a little pencil in the air is going to fix this, huh?
My favorite.
See how it goes.
My favorite tweet that resurfaces every time with Patricia is like, just a reminder that this is a guy that keeps a pencil in his ear with a laminated play sheet.
Yeah.
And that always, like, every single time Patricia comes up, like, that tweet always resurfaces of like, yeah, this is a guy with a pencil in his ear on a laminated play sheet in front of him. Like,
and just, the stories coming out, you know, through The Athletic, through our Lions beat writers about the Matt Patricia days in Detroit are just wild, man. It is.
Let me just tell you, any story that you hear, and you know, I have some semblance of insight on that. They're some of them are the tip of the iceberg.
You can't even tell the good ones. Yeah.
Some of them are the tip of the iceberg. I've heard some stuff.
To have Matt Millen and then later go to Matt Patricia, it doesn't get much worse than that.
Yeah. After hearing Jalen Hurts had the flu and then the Matt Patricia thing, that was one of the dumber picks I made this year, was taking the Eagles to cover that game in Seattle. And Seattle, you know, looked pretty scary with the backup quarterback. In the NFC as well as the Lions, Bucks, Vikings, and Rams in the hunt that are still have not wrapped up, I should say, a playoff spot. And then we've got Seattle, New Orleans, Atlanta, Green Bay, the Giants, and Bears still technically in the hunt. I would say the Packers and Seahawks are the teams to watch out for if you're a Cowboys fan in that group. But I mean, the Lions and Bucks and Rams are pretty frisky teams. And so it's not just the 49ers and Eagles that the Cowboys have to worry about. This is going to be a really tough gauntlet down the stretch.
The Cowboys and Lions are by far the two teams I watch the most. I'm very confident that the Cowboys will beat the Lions in 2 weeks at AT&T Stadium.
Okay.
I'm not very confident that the Cowboys would beat the Lions in Detroit in the playoffs. And the reason I say that is because I can see them getting downhill, running the ball well against, I mean, that's the thing. Like, the Dolphins and Lions are two of the, you know, top running teams in the NFL. And while I think the Cowboys, when they're at their best, they're better than those teams. I think on the road is where it starts becoming a little bit of an issue for them. And so we'll see. They got to show, you know, there's no, we sit here on podcasts talking about what are the answers between them playing at home on the road. They don't got any of the answers either. Believe me, they would have, this isn't new. They would have exhausted all of them, flying in the day of the game, you know, staying, arriving to the stadium earlier, whatever like kind of thing you want to do, taking the ball if you win the toss as opposed to deferring, they would try any of those things if they thought it would spark this thing. And so they don't have any answers either on this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
-1.5 the line in favor of the Dolphins for Christmas Eve, John. What are you looking for in this game? What's your gut telling you?
I do think the Dolphins are going to play well. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. I don't think that they're going to run the ball as well as Buffalo did. There's just something about with the way this Cowboys team plays coming off of losses. But they certainly have the ability to. They have the players there. This is just such a speedy team. They can just beat you in so many ways offensively. But I can see where if I expect that the Cowboys offense will play much better than they did. They should have a chip on their shoulder. They're too good to play as poorly as they did in Buffalo. I'm telling you, that first half, there was no issue at all. There's no excuse for them not to have at least one touchdown in the first half. There's too many weapons there. I think they have a bounce back performance. And because of that, I think there's some more situations where you see Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence able to affect Tua in the pocket, throwing the football, where you just never really even got to that against Buffalo. You never really got to a point where you had to make Josh Allen take some big hits while he was throwing. It never got there. So, I think it'll be a close game. It's tough for me to pick the Cowboys here. The only reason why I would pick the Cowboys is just because they have not lost back-to-back games since 2021. I mean, there's something to be said for that, but there's also something to be said for they don't have a ton of impressive road wins during these last few seasons. I mean, when you really break it down, when we're talking about them going on the road and playing good teams like the Dolphins are, do you count beating the Bucks in the wild card round? They were impressive, obviously, last year when they went to Minnesota. Minnesota was playing really well. That was a huge road win. A couple years back, right before the bye, that road win at New England was obviously a big one. But there's not many. There's not many big road wins against good teams during this last 3-year stretch.
Yeah, I agree. I think honestly, there's so few impressive road wins in this stretch that I think, honestly, this Philadelphia game earlier this year in Philadelphia is one of the more impressive road performances that I've seen, just because even though they lost, it was just better than beating the Panthers in Carolina or something like that, So I absolutely, there's not a lot to pick from there. If I'm picking the game against the Dolphins, I don't know if I can cheat and pick a caveat, but I would just say if Tyreek Hill plays, then I'm picking the Dolphins. And if Tyreek Hill doesn't, then then I would pick the Cowboys, because I think they have enough to where they can neutralize one or two weapons of those caliber in the passing game and focus on the run game. But if they have to deal with those two running backs and Tyreek and Waddle, like I just don't think that they can do it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The Dolphins, in my opinion, way more weapons than the Buffalo Bills. I think more highly of Mike McDaniel than I do of Joe Brady. It'll be interesting to see what takeaways McDaniel has from what Buffalo was able to do in the run game. And I mean, Miami's all about speed and angles. So I'm a little bit worried about this one, to be quite honest with you. What do you think Jerry thinks of Mike McDaniel, John?
Oh, I think he thinks he's probably pretty cool guy with a lot of style and wouldn't mind him coaching the Cowboys. No, I don't. I think he thinks he's a really good offensive mind. I think for anybody, when it comes to Mike McDaniel, it's going to come down to, you know, he's obviously got a lot in his bag offensively, but it's, can you win in the postseason? That'll be how he's kind of judged. You know what I'm saying? Like, he can obviously put up a ton of points, and that's going to be very attractive to a lot of front offices, but does that work in the postseason? You know, and in a way, it's, I'm trying to think of the best.
It's unfortunate he's coaching.
For me, I would say my best comp is Mike D'Antoni. Really good NBA coach, okay. Puts up a ton of points, but there's also a part of you where you're just like, will this work when it matters the most in multiple playoff series? And so, maybe it does for Mike McDaniel, because there's a lot with Mike McDaniel. You could have said the same thing about Sean McVay, and obviously he proved, got to multiple Super Bowls, won one. So I think he's one of the best young head coaches in the game. I think a lot of teams would love to have Mike McDaniel for sure. One positive, though, I feel like we've been a little overly negative maybe about the Cowboys, so I will give you one positive. In 2010, when the Packers won the Super Bowl, they lost their last two road games. In week 14 and week 15, at Detroit and at New England. They went on to win their last two home games and finished the season 10-6. And then obviously they went on the road, beat the Eagles, Falcons, and Bears, and then beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl. So I think Mike McCarthy is a little bit familiar with this territory. Different teams, but yeah.
Yeah, not to poo-poo on that positivity, but I don't know about that Detroit game, but I do know that New England game, because that was peak Patriots fandom to me. That was Matt Flynn. That was not Aaron Rodgers. So I think he was with, I don't know if he was without Rodgers against Detroit, but I do know it was a Tully Bantakane strip sack of Matt Flynn.
The old rest up game, yeah.
Well, no, Aaron Rodgers was hurt. He was hurt in that game. Yeah, he was hurt. I remember watching that. It was a Sunday night game.
Well, I tried to be positive, Saad. I was trying to be positive. And you got to come in with these facts. Rodgers just played like a little bit against the Lions. It might have been like, okay. I don't know, like the first couple of series were. But yeah, Flynn played most of that game.
Okay, so yeah, that's the only thing. That's like, you know, that he was without a starting quarterback for those two games.
All right, guys. Well, the season's over. We'll see you with our next podcast before the combine.
I mean,
way to be a jerk, Saad.
In all honesty, this could be a turning point for this team. I mean, they can go on a run here, use this as a fire under their ass and really put something together. But it seems like they're going to have a bounce back week and then probably take another week off, headed into the playoffs, and then probably impress us like they did last year in the first round, and then stumble again. It seems to be a roller coaster ride. And, you know, I would be a little bit less concerned if this was another Arizona loss, to be quite honest with you, because this is the NFL and teams can get overlooked. Things can happen. You can lose games. But like I was saying earlier, when you know the mentality going into this is we need to beat these teams and you play like that, that's what's concerning. Yep. So that's my biggest takeaway from the past week. Let's hit some picks, though, for the Miami Dolphins v. Cowboys Christmas Eve extravaganza. What are they going to have planned for the kettle this time? That's my big question for this game. Are they going to have a Christmas ham? Maybe the Grinch pops out?
They're in Miami. The There's no kettles in Miami.
Oh, sorry. I thought they were going to Maybe bring it on the road. Sorry.
All right. Well, let me talk to some people.
Pretty good luck. I mean,
turkey legs.
Should consider.
You guys want to fix this whole home road thing? Bring one of those kettles with you and see what happens. Put it in the locker room. They won't let you bring it out on the field. Just put it in the locker room. Let some guys jump in it before the game. Eat some turkey legs.
Hey,
let's just see what happens.
What was that weird thing that happened like a couple of years ago with the benches with Washington, where you're like bringing your own benches or something?
Exactly.
Like,
what I'm saying. That kettle. Bring
Jason Garrett used
you.
To bring that weird dummy on the road. Remember that?
They bring like all four of those kettles, and
Jason
like,
Garrett used
nowhere to,
like, to
even move in the locker room, and it just
he used to have a mannequin.
Yeah,
that was in a just a generic uniform and
nameless
and
faceless opponent.
The nameless faceless opponent used to put it outside the team meeting room on the road. And I just remember seeing being on the team plane and looking out and seeing the equipment guys with a body bag putting it under the plane.
Yeah, those drug sniffing
making
dogs
these guys
love that.
Carry a body bag around. For
hey
a,
guys, we're just having fun here.
Nameless
Sorry,
faceless
officers,
opponent.
This is our mannequin.
We'll play on the moon. Play in Brazil. It doesn't matter. I'm going to go Dolphins 29, Cowboys 27. What about you, John?
Man, I like that score. And I really do like the Dolphins to win this game. But for some reason, I'm going to take the Cowboys 31-27. Makes no sense. They just haven't lost back-to-back games in forever. They should be relatively healthy. I think they find a way.
Christmas miracle. That's right. I'm dreading flying to Miami on the 23rd. I'm dreading flying on the 23rd, but you know, flying back on the 25th will be a lot better. I'm sure the airports will be chill, but I'm going to use my caveat. I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm going to say if Tyreek plays, I'm taking the Dolphins 35, Cowboys 28. If Tyreek does not play, I'm taking Cowboys 28. So Cowboys still score 28, Dolphins 24. So.
Wow. Tyreek's worth a lot.
Yeah.
Man, I am.
I think he plays. To be honest with you, I think that's why he sat out last week. I think he'll play this game.
I do too. And in that case, I would take the Dolphins.
Got it. Got you down. We asked for a pick from KT. He's at a company event this evening and has not replied back. So if you want KT's pick,
he said, "Go F yourselves." Cool. Thanks, KT.
Oh, he did reply. Yeah. Oh, screw you, KT. Well, one last thing I want to ask you guys before we hit the official Christmas day, which will be next time we talk to you will be next week sometime after Christmas. We got the office fanboys in the house, especially Sod.
Oh, John,
what's your opinion, Sod? I need your pick on best office Christmas episode.
Oh, this is easy.
Man. The Dwight one. Like just the Dwight's Christmas for me is really good. But you know, my favorite one for me because of the moments is Phyllis as Santa. And is that you too, John?
I was going to say Yankee Swap, but go on.
Secret Santa.
Oh, Yankee Swap was really good. For me, the Phyllis Santa one is just like, you know, you have Michael's moments where he's dressed as Jesus and then he's like, "Sorry, your party's so lame, Jesus." And like, you know, he's just like, and then he's just like sitting there and like, and where does it stop? Where does this stop? And so, and then Kevin sitting in Michael's lap is like, "I'm going to get you helium balloons so Santa doesn't have to go through this again."
No, that's good.
I'll give you a hint. He has a power of flight. His last name is Christ. Can heal leopards.
There's so many moments from that one that come to my mind. Yankee Swap was also really good where, you know, sucka. That's a really good
one. Michael with the iPod thing is so awkward. I mean, it just makes me cringe so hard when he has
I would just like to be around wherever it happened, where if it was a writer or if it was just kind of, they just were kind of role-playing different scenes to try and come up with something. But whoever came up with the idea of just taking the Santa suit and turning it inside out and being like, no, we can turn this into Jesus. It's just like, Yeah. To me, it's just so funny. Like, who, I don't know. I give Steve Carell a lot of credit because I think a lot of the stuff he just randomly comes up with. But I wonder if that was like written in where they were like, no. And then when you're real angry, you just turn that thing inside out.
And he comes out as Jesus, and Angela's all like, thank you.
I'm telling you, if I could have lunch or dinner with, if I could have a meal with one person from the show, as much as I love Michael Scott and Steve Carell and Kevin and all that stuff, it would be Michael Schur. Like, I would want to talk to Michael Schur, who, for those that don't know, is like the creator of the show, or like writer or whatever. He's like the brains behind not only that show, but Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec. And just FYI, he plays Moe's in The Office. So I'd love, like, you look at that guy as the genius behind the show, and I'm just like, I would want to pick his brain on so many things about that show. But yeah, the Yankee swap one was a really good one too. And that was the first one, right? It was first or second.
Benny Hanna Christmas, isn't that?
Him holding up that handmade oven mitt by Phyllis. Really, Phyllis? Like, I don't know. They're just,
for me, the hand mitt, the moment with the hand mitt one is the sucka. Like,
sucka. Yeah, somebody takes that.
I'm gonna go with Classy Christmas, where Holly Flax comes back and he has to have a really classy Christmas party and dresses up as sexy Santa with, you know, because what's better, hiring a jazz band for an hour or one bassist for the entire day?
That was definitely good too. Yeah.
I love doing that, putting a little playlist on and having those episodes play while we're decorating the tree. So would definitely suggest you do the same. And shout out to noted Cowboys fan, Jenna Fisher, a.k.a. Pam Beasley.
Yes.
Stay hard, Jenna. All right. That's all we got for this week. We'll be back after Christmas. Everyone have a wonderful Christmas Eve watching the Cowboys. A great Christmas. And we'll probably be back the day after Christmas. So look for a podcast then. Probably have KT then. Can't wait for that. Until next time, for John and Saad, I'm Kent. See you next time on About Them Cowboys. Goodbye.
Austin Powers.